Welcome to this Walnut Wednesday edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to our special Walnut Wednesday report, we'll bring you a look at national and regional agricultural news here on the show today. And I'll start things off with a look at regional agricultural news right after this.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Board and Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
During the next several weeks, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's National Agricultural Statistics Service will conduct two major mid-year surveys, the June Agricultural Survey and the June Area Survey. The agency will contact nearly 2,000 producers across California to determine crop acreage and stock levels as of June 1st, 2023. Producers can respond to the June Agricultural Survey online at agcounts.usda.gov, by phone, or by mail. They will be asked to provide information on planned and harvested acreage, including acreage for biotech crops and grain stocks. For the June area survey, agency representatives will interview farm and ranch operators in randomly selected segments over the phone. Producers will be asked to provide information on crop acreage, grain stocks, livestock inventory, land values, and value of sales. NAS will analyze the survey information and publish the results in a series of USDA reports, including the annual acreage and quarterly grain stocks reports on June 30th of 2023. Thanks to significant rainfall over the past several months, the North Bay region has rebounded well from the drought that ravaged Marin and Sonoma County agricultural businesses from 2019 to 2022. Reservoirs, creeks, and other freshwater sources that feed farms and ranches and thus feed humans are well stocked again. Now the agricultural community is analyzing its response to the emergency. A new report showcases the creative solutions used to adjust to the extreme dry conditions during those 3 years. The counties of Marin and Sonoma collaborated on the report with more than a dozen local, state, and federal partners. Agricultural resilience in the face of extreme dry conditions can be found on the University of California Extension website. As highlighted in the report, ranching and farming are vital to the economies of both Sonoma and Marin counties. A few of the locally grown and produced agricultural products include wine grapes, livestock, dairy products, poultry, shellfish, and fruit and vegetable growers. The 2021 combined total production value of Marin and Sonoma agriculture was more than $356 million, not including wine grapes that contribute an extra $540 million. The report and collaborative effort highlighted lessons learned from predecessors to proactively respond to the drought and create long-term resiliency. The drought felt by Sonoma and Marin counties required an emergency response, which no one agency or organization could possibly address independently. A few key lessons learned were advanced recognition and planning for conditions in the winter of 2019 was key to coordination and response. Allocating and delivering water to meet minimum needs for both rural and residential and agricultural uses as possible, even under the most limited supply. State and federal response was more effective due to MSDC's coordination and partnership. Frequent and routine communication between local leaders, technical and financial services providers, and agricultural producers was established and maintained. Local, state, and federal sources of funding were secured and distributed as an investment to counter the economic costs from extreme dry conditions to agricultural operations, and innovations in in-farm water management were scaled up through cost share and technical assistance programs. The three-year drought was the region's worst since 1977 to 78 and is part of the most pronounced dry period in over 1,200 years. From 2019 to 2022, rainfall amounts ranged from 17 to 68% of normal. Marin and Sonoma counties were among 50 California counties mentioned in April of 2021 on a federal list of natural disaster areas because of the drought. State and local emergency declarations followed that month, and water agencies embarked on a public education campaign to urge conservation. There's always a bit of uncertainty hanging over just when U.S. retailers will start the transition to imported soft citrus. This year is no different, according to Mark Greenberg of Capespan North America. For California, the soft citrus or easy peeler market is still largely dominated by mandarins out of California. They're not seeing a large-scale retailer transition to imported sources. California mandarins largely continue to meet retailers' needs, he says, though this could come to an end with the weather heating up in the San Joaquin Valley, in which mandarin quality and condition will suffer. California endured a wet winter, which delayed the harvest of both mandarins and oranges and extended the season. It's an entirely different picture from last year when California was out out of the market fairly early. Greenberg wonders what the impact will be on the next season's crop. He says California has allowed a lot of fruit to hang longer than normal. He wonders with this protected season if they will see a smaller crop next year and perhaps a later start. Bee Vectoring Technologies International has announced a company record-breaking sales order with one of the largest blueberry growers in the United States who will integrate Vectorite with CR7, biological fungicide and natural precision agriculture system in their blueberry operations in the upcoming growing season in the Pacific Northwest. This new customer is an enterprise-sized grower with large-scale operations in multiple key growing regions and will be implementing a BVT system on over 50 acres of their operations spread across Washington and Oregon, that according to Ian Collison, sales brand manager at BVT. He says this significant development is a strong indication of the growing confidence that growers have in the BVT system, as most growers historically have tested with small acreages first before committing to such a large portion of their operations. After this initial growing season with a customer, BVT will have the opportunity to gain further acreage in Oregon and extend the relationship into California, where the grower has significant acreage as well. A bountiful summer of California strawberries is ahead for California Giant Berry Farms as the company forecasts giant volumes, their cornerstone product. Despite the later than average start for some of its growing regions, the company is on track to deliver peak promotable volumes of California strawberries. 2023 was a challenging year for some of their growing regions, according to Andy Rice, Vice President of Field Operations and Product Supply. He said ultimately, weather impacted crops early on from above average amounts of rain, flooding, and uncharacteristically cold weather. Like most California production, their production curve was shifted and peak promotable volumes are arriving, albeit later than average. Out of the Santa Maria region, a grower shipper reports sizable high-quality fruit. The region is amid its peak volume window, which is forecasted to maintain through mid-June. The Watsonville and Salinas growing region, despite initial weather challenges, are seeing a week-over-week increase in volumes, with estimates projecting substantial harvested volumes beginning mid-June and spanning to early August. Due to the area's late start, the company is forecasting that the fruit will be available late into the summer. The region's ranches are reporting excellent quality and flavor, alongside sizable fruit. California Giant's peak promotable volumes come at a time when consumers are enjoying berries more than ever. Recent USDA data reports that gains in retail per capita consumption for berries have been very strong compared with many other fresh fruits. Strawberry consumption specifically has grown from 4.6 pounds in 2011 to 6.7 pounds in 2021, an overall gain of 45%. To support the expected influx of strawberries, a grower shipper employs Instacart advertising and Ibotta consumer promotions to drive purchase intent for fresh berries. In correlation, the brand will launch consumer engagement sweepstakes to further drive brand awareness and demand.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the only event of its kind taking place this summer. Join us on June 21st, 2023 in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event. The Crop Consultant Connect event will bring you and many of your independent crop consultant peers together. You'll also get access to virtual CE hours as an exclusive thank you for attending this event. Your registration includes breakfast, lunch, coffee, snacks, as well as a wealth of information you're able to glean from this experience. Please visit progressivecrop.com for more information. Join us on June 21st in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante. Imagination, innovation, science in action.
Depressed walnut prices and higher input costs have put a premium on pest management decisions and increased the importance of dormant monitoring for scale pests in walnuts. UCIPM pest management guidelines advise growers and crop consultants to monitor scaffolds, limbs, branches, and prunings in the dormant period for San Jose scale, Italian pear scale, and, most prominently, for walnut scale and frosted scale. At high populations, walnut and frosted scales can reduce yields and quality and create issues with other plant pests, particularly Botrytis spirea. Emily Sims, former UCCE IPM advisor and current senior manager of technical field services for Sutera, went in depth into some of these more prominent scale pests in walnut and some of the dangers they can pose.
The two primary scale species that tend to rise to the level of requiring treatment are walnut scale and frosted scale. There are also San Jose scale, Italian pear scale, and European fruit lichenium that might be found in orchards. And often these are not typically to high enough levels to be of concern for treatment. It really is walnut scale and frosted scale that we tend to focus on. Walnut scale, San Jose scale, and Italian pear scale are what we call hard scales or armored scales. And the cover of these, the scale cover, is this kind of flattened shape, and it's actually separate from the insect body underneath. This is kind of important when we start talking about some monitoring approaches. With frosted scale and European fruit lichenium, these are what are called soft scales, kind of a different general category of the overall classification of scales. And in that case, it's a much more domed body, and the actual scale cover and body are all one kind of single unit. All of these scale pests feed with piercing, sucking mouth parts. So they pierce into the plant and suck out plant juices. This in turn is one of the chief concerns with a scale infestation, because these openings can create entry points for pathogens. Specifically of concern is Botrytis spirea. And so that's one of the chief dangers of having a scale infestation in the orchard. Soft scales actually produce honeydew because they feed on the phloem. So honeydew is that kind of sugary exudate that they will secrete as a byproduct of their feeding. The hard scales do not. So a bit of an additional consideration when you have soft scales is this honeydew production, which can then can facilitate the growth of sooty mold and potentially lead to sunburn, increased likelihood of sunburn in walnuts, which is a big issue. Typically low to moderate overall population levels, if we take out the Botrytis spirea concern, are not terribly damaging to the plant. But anytime you get a high enough population, Botrytis spirea aside, it can cause some decline in plant health and dieback and things like that. So we do have to keep an eye on these different pests.
Out of the scale species that Sims listed, the walnut scale, of course, is the most detrimental to walnut trees. Sims said it looks more or less like a crusty barnacle on the tree and can be hard to see. And really, the only type of scouting that growers and consultants have is visual.
We don't have like traps and lures necessarily for these. So we're out looking for visual signs of the actual population itself. And we can monitor the crawler stage to some degree, but really what is suggested is to get out during the dormant period when the populations are quite visible, you don't have a lot of foliage that you're dealing with, and doing your dormant scout and actually looking for any and all of these species. So we'll be looking for evidence of walnut scale. So these kind of small white sort of almost daisy shaped clusters of the scale cover. It's really important that as you're scouting these populations, that you're confirming that they are an active infestation, meaning that they're actually still alive. With the hard scales, that scale cover can stay attached to the plant surface long after the insect underneath is dead, either from parasitization or an earlier chemical treatment. And so I always suggest taking a small blade, the tip of your knife or fingernail, if you can, scraping off some of the scale covers. And looking beneath, walnut scale has a bright kind of yellow body underneath if it's still alive. And if you poke into that and it squishes, you know you've got a live one on your hand. If you take that scale cover off and the body beneath is a little darker and translucent and flecks off really easily, that means that particular organism is already dead. And so before you decide to do a treatment, as we know, 2022 is going to be another year of uncertainty with water availability of resources with supply chain. And certainly we only want to treat when we absolutely have to prevent economic damage. So make sure that those populations are alive. At the same time, treatment thresholds or decision to treat should also heavily rely on how much natural biological control you're observing in the orchard. There are some effective parasitoids that kind of when left to flourish and not destroyed by some of our other practices, can provide some pretty good control of these populations. And you'll just look for what are quite obvious, they're exit holes in the scale cover. So you'll see a perforated hole in the scale cover. That's where the adult parasitoid has emerged. And if you see a significant level of parasitism, you may choose to just let the biological control flourish and not treat necessarily at this particular time. The UCIPM website has some great visual resources for what to look for with each of these species with the dormant monitoring form. I did briefly mention monitoring crawlers. That's something that's done later in season. The reason why you would want to monitor for crawlers is if you're actually going to do a crawler treatment. We do that. It's pretty rudimentary, double-sided sticky tape wrapped around the twig or branch near what looks like an active infestation. And then we can understand when the crawlers are emerging to time a potential crawler treatment or as evidence that an earlier treatment, a delayed dormant, was effective. So that's the other main scouting method or monitoring method.
Sims said that really for all of these species, particularly walnut and frosted scale, the delayed dormant period is the most ideal period of the season to treat from an operational and an efficacy standpoint.
You really just want to get out before shoot growth begins. And so you've got some flexibility. In addition, during that delayed dormant period, you don't have a lot of other spray operations that you might be juggling once you get a coddling moth treatment and things like that. And so while the crawler treatment can be effective, you've got to time that based on crawler emergence pretty tightly. The years that we were doing studies, the crawler emergence was widely variable year to year between, you know, mid-April all the way out to mid-May. And so, you know, you've also got other operations there. You also have a lot more foliage, so you're not going to get quite the coverage. So delayed dormant probably is the Cadillac timing. If you miss it or didn't realize you had a problem until you saw crawlers emerge, then the crawler treatment is viable also. UC actually has some pretty great treatment guidelines for these different species. Italian parascale rarely requires an insecticide treatment on its own. It's typically associated with lichens. And if you can control the lichens with what's called a Bordeaux mixture, which is a combo copper sulfate, lime, and water, usually that scale population then reduces. So we're really talking about, you know, walnut scale, frosted scale, and maybe if you've got some Lacanium or San Jose scale. With the delayed dormant treatments. Again, UC has some pretty good treatment threshold guidelines. And in addition, former UC advisor Danny Lytle and I created a pretty neat visual decision tree for all of the species except Italian parascale with regard to treatment decision support. And that's available on the sacvalleyorchards.com website. If you go to walnut and scroll down to insects and pests, there's a blog post that says walnut dormant monitoring and treatment decisions. And we've created a nice graphic, basically decision tree for treatment there. The primary kind of insecticides of choice are insect growth regulators, either buprofurthin, which is trade name is Centaur, or pyriproxifen, trade name is Cs. Those seem to do the best job having the least non-target impacts to those parasitoids because they are more specific and less broad spectrum. Our research that we did a few years ago, Bob Van Steenwyck and myself, showed that we can actually suppress populations for multiple seasons after a treatment. And so it might not be that an annual treatment is needed, which circles back to the importance of that dormant monitoring to confirm whether your infestation is active.
Sponsored by the California Walnut Boarding Commission, supporting the industry with on-farm innovation through production research, advocacy for government programs, and driving consumer demand. Doing more together.
Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
The Supreme Court has handed down its ruling in a Sackett versus Environmental Protection Agency case, and the High Court has overturned the Ninth Circuit Court ruling that had been in EPA's favor. Justice Alito, for the majority, dramatically narrowed the amount of wetlands covered by the Clean Water Act to include only those with a continuous surface connection to larger bodies of water. This effectively rewrites the Clean Water Act to exclude wetlands that are adjacent to but not directly connected to larger bodies of water. This is considered a big win for agriculture. The majority opinion adopted the 2006 Waters of the U.S. rule. The Environmental Protection Agency will recommend delaying a program that would allow electric vehicle manufacturers to access tradable credits under the renewable fuel standard. Two sources told Reuters News that the White House will review the EPA's final rule. The plan would have given EV automakers credits for charging vehicles using power generated from natural gas or methane. The threat of potential lawsuits also could have played a part in a postponement. The initial proposal last November could have generated as much as 600 million tradable credits in 2024 and 1.2 billion in 2025. Prices for equivalent biofuel credits have recently traded over $2 each. The two sources say the Biden administration is still hoping to pass a final rule on the EV program before the end of 2023, even if it gets uncoupled from the yearly blending mandates. Biden is boosting the EV industry in an effort to reduce carbon emissions. The USDA published a request for information announcing public listening sessions and soliciting public comments on possible changes to prevent planting crop insurance coverage. In addition to the written public comment period, the Risk Management Agency will hold in-person and virtual listening sessions from June through August. They truly care about what their customers, the nation's agricultural producers, have to say, according to RMA Administrator Marsha Bunker. That's why they're hosting listening sessions in 11 states in addition to accepting written comments. The request for information is looking for input on the harvest price option, the 1-in-4 rule, the 10% additional coverage option, the contract prices, as well as general information on farmers' willingness to pay additional premiums for expanded preventive planting benefits. They also want recommendations on other potential prevent planting limitations. Additional details on the listening sessions, including the schedule, are available on the RMA website. At a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing, Zach Duchenal, administrator of the USDA Farm Service Agency, talked about efforts to help make more credit available to beginning farmers.
We're working to streamline our loan application process and eliminate the barriers between producers in those circumstances. We've got by far the best opportunity for producers to take advantage of the opportunity to get into agriculture with our credit programs, and we continue to refine that. And you'll see some of those provisions that we've offered indicated in the President's 2024 budget. We welcome a chance to follow up more deeply with you on that as you consider your options for the 2023 Farm Bill.
USDA's Farm Service Agency Administrator Zach Duchenal. A new study highlights the potential long-term profitability increase from 15 to 25% for producers who embrace soil health or regenerative agriculture, but the study points to barriers such as revenue losses in that 3 to 5 year transition period. The Boston Consulting Group released its report called Cultivating Farmer Prosperity, Investing in Regenerative Agriculture, along with One Planet Business for Biodiversity, known as OP2B, which is a coalition of nearly 30 companies, including several in food production. The study makes the case that there is a business case for regenerative agriculture with longer-term profitability by converting farming practices. The study comes as USDA is finalizing agreements under the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities, a $3.1 billion effort to provide more incentives to producers to sequester carbon in the soil and lower emissions. USDA announced 141 potential partners and seeks to reach more than 60,000 producers and 25 million acres of farmland. Each of those programs is expected to provide farmers with more financial and technical support to transition their farms.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.